5 miles east to the village of Rotz Lehamel, where we'd be relieving the regiment de la Chaudière. It was to be a night relief, and after dusk on the 17th or 18th of June, we set off, going across country at night with no moon. It's not an easy task, and it was only by good fortune that I did not get my platoon lost. We were following another platoon and momentarily lost contact as we were going through a hedgerow. On the other side, I looked around and no one in sight. Lucky at the last moment, I caught sight of a blurred figure disappearing, followed it, and was able to catch up with the leading platoon. Rotz was situated on a rise of ground overlooking a valley, the opposite side held by the Germans, 1,000 yards away. The valley, during the 3 weeks we were there, became a no man's land, each side trying to control it by fire and patrols. My platoon was in the right sector of the battalion, and in the distance we could see the hangars at Carpiquet Airfield, and further on the top of the spire of Caen Cathedral. The Germans shelled and mortared us unexpectedly and dangerously. They used their 88mm anti-aircraft guns in a direct roll, and the velocity was such that you did not hear it until the shell had crashed. In addition, they used Moaning Minis, a mortar which had a high-pitched scream just before the shell landed. Both caused many casualties, although my platoon was lucky to escape. On one occasion, a mortar attack started and we all dived for slit trenches. Three of us tried to get into one, the last being my batman, who went in head first with his rear sticking up above the trench. Without thinking, I took off my helmet and stuck it on his bum. What good it was done, I don't know. In Rotz, we had our first church service. The padre, Roy Seaborn, held a series of these in an apple orchard in the Lehamel part of the village. It was a peaceful, relatively quiet day when by sections we attended the service. We remembered those who had been killed, those who had been wounded, prayed for the safe return to Canada, to our families, sang Onward Christian Soldiers, we all knew that, and ended up with the Padre's blessing. It was a memorable day, which has never been forgotten. During the time we were in Rotz, I was called upon to lead another night patrol, again for the express purpose of capturing prisoners. We went through the same drill of preparing, but this time the patrol was of 10 men, including myself, as we brought along a Bren gun section. We started off before midnight and quietly moved through the wheat fields until we came to an unpaved road, which must have led from Vieux Caron to Carpiquet. We saw two German soldiers walking along the road, but they were not close enough for us to establish a snatch before they disappeared. I thought they may have come from a position east of us, and were being relieved. We waited as I hoped they or others might come back again, but nothing happened. After 3 hours, I had decided to withdraw and came back empty-handed, to the disappointment of battalion headquarters. In hindsight, I believe I probably should have been more aggressive, but was probably spoiled by the easiness of the Puto snap. In any event, Sergeant Tom Carney took out a patrol a few days later, which went out at night, stayed in the wheat fields all day under broiling sun, and returned the following night, also empty-handed. We learned much later that the Germans were very careful not to wander from their positions at night. Such was the reputation of the Canadians for night patrolling. Do you want a drink or something? Let's take a... On the 6th of July, we were told that the Battle of Caen was about to take place, and on the evening of 7th of July, the battalion was relieved by a British armored regiment and began moving to Caen. That evening, we were given an aerial display of might that few have ever seen. To soften up Caen, the Allies sent 500 bombers at about 2,000 feet. They passed directly over us. In addition, the Royal Navy joined the Braz with its battleship 16-inch guns. And as the shells passed overhead at about 500 feet, they sounded exactly like an express train traveling through the sky. The noise was a continual roar, similar to an immense waterfall, which lasted over an hour. We couldn't help feeling sorry for those unfortunates on the receiving end, although it gave us a great boost in morale. We got what sleep we could, and the next morning moved to the assembly area, a midpoint between Vieux Caron and the village of Grouchy, where we dug in. On the way, we were subject to intense sniper fire, and suddenly I received a tremendous blow to the head and found myself on the ground, staring at my steel helmet with a bullet hole through the rim, which had cut my chin strap and nicked my temple. I got to my feet, burning with fury that anyone should have the audacity to fire at me, and began to clear the area. We discovered later that units of 9 Brigade had passed over this location, but had not cleared it, with the result that Jack Gallagher's platoon, number 13, and my platoon, number 15, succeeded in flushing out 30 Germans who had hidden in the wheat fields and been hidden in the wheat fields in the bypass dugouts. My blood was up, and if time had permitted, I would have gleefully shot the lot. They were identified as 12th SS Panzer Regiment, one of the toughest units in the German Army. At 17:30 hours, we moved across the start line. The battalion objective was Cussy. C Company left and A Company right, with B and D in reserve. My platoon was given the job of capturing the very left part of the village. Hence, I was the left platoon of the battalion. Jack Gallagher was on my right, and a reinforcement officer who had just joined us, a Lieutenant Harling, in reserve with number 14 platoon. Noise, noise, noise. Our guns firing, enemy mortars and 88s, machine guns. Buzz, buzz, buzz. No good ducking. Keep him moving. Check section on left, section on right. Tom Carney, platoon headquarters, and reserve section behind. Keep advancing. Our shells landing just in front. Great artillery shooting. Some falling behind. Not ours, but the Germans. We were walking between them. Two barrages. A very funny feeling. Boom. Flat on my back. Get up. Keep moving. A very close mortar shell. Enemy fire increasing from Beto on the left. Thought that had been cleared. Got to get forward. Keep moving. Must be Cussy just ahead. My God, a walled village. We're too much to the right. Can't take whole village with one platoon. Time to charge. Get my men up. Up the Scottish. And in we go. Somehow get through wall into yard. Move left into small orchard. One section with me. Look ahead. See German behind wall. Aim my Schmeisser and fire. Chips fly from stone wall. Missed. Great blow on the leg. Hell, I'm hit. Get up and hobble to the other wall. Where are my men? Must be all killed or wounded. All alone. Look around corner of wall. Boom! Bloody big panzer tank staring me in the face. Leg hurts. Lie down behind wall and small pile of rubble. Poke my head out. Twang! Two Germans 20 yards away, potting at me. Another hole in the helmet. What to do? Lie still. Might think you are dead. If they rush, what do I have? Only pistol and grenade. Okay, grenade. Carefully ease out of pocket. Place fingers on ring. If raise up to throw, great target. Have to throw on side. Good time to pray. I lay there for what seemed like hours as the battle raged in the village. It seemed ironic that in this considerable orchard there were three lone soldiers, all flat in their bellies, waiting for the first move. Suddenly a shout, machine gun firing, and Tom Carney appeared with the remainder of the platoon. They dispatched the two Germans, and Tom found me. I was never so glad to see anyone in my whole life. He didn't say much, except to say that the village was in our hands. He picked me up and carried me to company headquarters, dumped me, and returned to the platoon. Dev Crosston was not there, but the 2IC, Heck Alexander, was manning the carrier set. What are you doing here, he said. I've just come from my platoon, I said. Well, you better get back to your platoon, he said. Yes, sir, I said, and thought, boy, he's a heartless bugger. I hobbled back to the platoon headquarters, and Tom immediately asked me what I was doing there. Enemy guns and mortar fire began to fall, so we crouched in an old German shelter. It eased up, and I started to go and inspect my positions, but by that time my leg was so stiff and painful I could not hobble. Tom went out and reported everything under control. Night fell with no counterattack. A very painful night. The men to carry me back again to company headquarters. There I was put in a jeep to be taken back to the regimental aid post. The Germans began firing the mortars, and suddenly I found myself sitting alone in the jeep. Everyone had dived for cover. The mortar fire ceased, and I was taken to the rear and then to the army hospital on the beach. That day the bullet was removed from my leg, and the following morning I was flown back to England. So ended my 35 days of Normandy experience. There you have it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add or talk about any topic that we haven't discussed?
General John Rockingham, who commanded Canadians in Northwest Europe and also Korea, thought the Canadian soldier to be the finest fighting soldier in the world, and I would certainly agree with him with that. They were really magnificent.
And how do you feel about your time spent in the military? You stayed in after, well, not right after the war, you got out and then joined back there.
No, I enjoyed the military life. It was, it has its drawbacks from a family point of view because it's unsettling. We lived in something like 22 different houses or apartments or places during my service, but the challenge and the experience was always stood me in very good stead, particularly when I left the Army and went into business. I've never regretted it.